The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is the new Growing in Faith Bible. It's written for children, grandchildren, and godchildren, ages 8 through 10. The Growing in Faith Bible contains more than 100 Bible stories with beautiful, engaging pictures. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Growing in Faith Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August. When I was growing up, it was, I think it's fair to say, a household name, Helen Keller. For many today, that might not be the case. She was something of a hero, overcoming both blindness and deafness and becoming a writer, even at times a speaker. I was shocked to recently learn that she held views very common in her day, by the way, very common in her day. She died about 1968. She held views that we call today eugenics, improving the stock of the human race, not only through better breeding, but through euthanasia and abortion and all other kind of, it's too little to call it mischief, we should just call it evils. How could she do this? How could she consistently hold a view that was eugenic and live the kind of life that she did? Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Monday, September the 9th. We're going to talk about Helen Keller's eugenic views. Katie Schuerman joins us. She's a pastor's wife, church musician, and speaker, author of the book He Remembers the Barren, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Why Helen Keller Believed in Eradicating People with Disabilities. Katie, welcome back.
It's great to be with you.
So who was Helen Keller, and how did you recently learn that she was a proponent of eugenics?
I have always been interested in the triumphant story of Helen Keller. You rightly qualified her as an American hero. She was born in Alabama in 1880, and at 19 months, she contracted an illness which deprived her of both her sight and her hearing. And when she was 6 years old, her family brought Miss Anne Sullivan to live with them, and Anne was a teacher. And Anne became Helen's teacher and mentor in life, and in an amazing, miraculous way, taught Helen not only how to communicate through her fingers, through the alphabet, the deaf alphabet spelling, by touching hands, but also, eventually, how to read Braille, how to write with her own hand, in a kind of writing that only those with sight can read, but then eventually even how to speak with her own voice. It's a story of an American with physical disabilities being given a rich life through the careful time and attention and love given by other human beings. And I also am a writer, so I'm fascinated in how she was able to achieve such a prolific output in her adulthood when it comes to writing. And I've always had a softness for her insofar as when it comes to classical education, which is something I've been reading a lot about lately, she comes up often. She's quoted often, especially in her collegiate education. She had a wonderful classical education, a wonderful education in the liberal arts. And so when I checked out her autobiography, The Story of My Life, a couple weeks ago, I was reading it and very much enjoying it. And my husband just kind of tossed over the edge of my book while he walked by. He said, "You do realize that she was a proponent of eugenics." And and then came my tailspin.
Why did you refuse to believe it at first?
Because her autobiography, which I should point out, she wrote around and published around the age of 22. There is such a strong thread throughout her entire narrative that is joyous, that is appreciative of the life she has and had, that does not even delve into the depression that could accompany her being in the dark, literally, and not being able to hear others who talk to her. But she was precocious always, always wanted to be with people, and obviously had a high intellect and was able to learn at a very quick rate. And so her narrative, as she describes her life, is one of gratefulness, one of thankfulness. There's very little in her autobiography that would hint that she thinks that there would be any life that has no value.
What in particular did Keller say on the subject of the sacredness of life?
Well, it might be helpful to know that, of course, in her adulthood, she was quite a prolific writer, especially she would kind of report on suffragette activity for the United Press. She strongly supported many social movements, one campaign to prevent infant blindness from venereal disease, and she was known at her time for having strong political views, and she was not afraid to express them even when they were unpopular. And one such expression of her political views came in the form of a letter published in the New Republic in December of 1915. She was particularly writing a letter in response to the public's criticism of a particular doctor who, in some ways, was a proponent of infanticide. And her response to the public's outrage, I'll quote her, quote, "If many of those that object to the physician's course would take trouble to analyze their idea of," and she puts in quotation marks, "life, I think they would find that it means just to breathe. Surely they must admit that such an existence is not worthwhile. It is the possibilities of happiness, intelligence, and power that give life its sanctity, and they are absent in the case of a poor, misshapen, paralyzed, unthinking creature." End quote.
Was she consistent in her views?
Well, she wasn't consistent when it comes to her autobiography and then this later letter. For example, her autobiography is titled The Story of My Life. And at the end of her autobiography, kind of the thesis of her entire book, the culmination of it, the statement that as a fellow writer, I would say, is her making sure she communicates clearly to the reader. The whole point of her telling the story of her life is this. She says, quote, "Thus it is that my friends have made the story of my life. In a thousand ways, they have turned my limitations into beautiful privileges and enabled me to walk serene and happy in the shadow cast by my deprivation." End quote. In other words, Pastor Wilkin, though Keller, in her youth, when she could not see, when she could not hear, when she had trouble fully communicating in the ways that we communicate with each other, you and I, she never refers to herself as an unthinking creature. In fact, she's very clear that even though she could not speak, even though she could not hear, she was certain of her family's love, especially her mother's. They were able to communicate with each other through other means and senses, particularly touch. And really, her autobiography is posited as just a defense in general for the time that Anne Sullivan gave to her in educating her. It's a justification of why this kind of education is important. She would even posit that she believes, as someone who is blind and deaf, that all humans have a foreknowledge of the senses, whether it's realized or not, whether we on the outside can see it or not. She says that they do. Quote, she writes, "It seems to me that there is in each of us a capacity to comprehend the impressions and emotions which have been experienced by mankind from the beginning. Each individual has a subconscious memory of the green earth and murmuring waters, and blindness and deafness cannot rob him of this gift from past generations. This inherited capacity is a sort of sixth sense, a soul sense, which sees, hears, feels all in one." End of quote. So you can see that Keller not only recognizes in herself her abilities, even before she was able to communicate them, she's ascribing them to all humanity. And something that I don't talk about in my article, but I think is important to note, there's a marvelous bit of video footage of Helen Keller later in life, and it's a demonstration of her ability to actually speak. And in the video, she's speaking. She's telling us what she's thinking and feeling, and she does have an assistant there to help interpret because it is difficult to understand what she's saying. And this is what Helen Keller, later in her life, says with her own voice. Quote, "It is not blindness or deafness that bring me my darkest hours. It is the acute disappointment in not being able to speak normally. Long have I felt how much more good I might have done if I had only acquired normal speech. But After this sorrowful experience, I understand more fully all human striving, thwarted ambitions, and the infinite capacity of all. End quote.
We're talking about Helen Keller's eugenics views. Katie Schuerman is our guest, author of a Federalist article titled Why Helen Keller Believed in Eradicating People with Disabilities. We'll talk about her influences next. Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During September, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their ministry of the month, Grace Place Wellness Ministries. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org, serving the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community, Lutheran Federal Credit Union, lutheranfcu.org.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilk. We're talking about Helen Keller's eugenics views. Katie Schuerman is our guest. We had mentioned before that these views were not uncommon during her lifetime. What were her influences?
Well, it does appear that in that time period, if you were a person born into any kind of privilege, it seems like it was a very common in vogue thing to think that bettering the human race through eugenics was a good thing. And Helen Keller actually dedicates her autobiography to one such progressive giant, and that is Alexander Graham Bell. What is just such a paradox about that is that Alexander Graham Bell is known as just being a very gentle, kind, nurturing man toward children, especially to those who are deaf, and to Helen Keller herself. She stayed in his home at different times. He knew how to sign with her, could communicate fully with her, but he has published different articles and communications that he actually thinks that the deaf should be forbidden to intermarry for fear that they would have deaf children. He was calling for an eradication of what he would see as a malfunction of humanity. And he's in company with Francis Crick, who thinks that not only should sterilization be done for those who he would call the poorly endowed genetically, but he even endorsed bribing people to be sterilized to try to influence that. Winston Churchill, George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, even our President Teddy Roosevelt, and of course Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood.
Keller, as you say, was born in two centuries back. She died mid-20th century, and some today consider eugenic thinking a thing of America's past. What do you say?
Oh, I think it's very much a part of our present. how many Americans are not alive today because of abortion clinics that have been planted specifically in urban areas where there is a high density of poor people. There is a eugenic philosophy behind that, that let's go ahead and kill out those who are seen not as viable in our society. Also, we have cases all over the world of euthanasia. When the elderly are inconvenient, they're seen as unwanted and unneeded. It's kind of a manifestation of George Bernard Shaw's ultimate theory, which is that people should have to prove their worth for existing. And if they can't, well, then let's get rid of them.
I've noticed that the standard, both past and present, of what makes a person valuable or even fully human is arbitrary. Why is this a very dangerous way of thinking, Katie?
Well, when I was in graduate school, I was blessed to get a grant to travel to Germany to do some research for my thesis. And while there, I visited a place called Dachau. And it's a terrible place to visit because of just how many people died there because of this eugenic philosophy. Nazi Germany is proof of the dangers of this line of thought. Whoever is in power gets to decide who should be killed. And I think history has proven to us that we, as humans, do not handle that responsibility well.
Why do we need to maintain the absolute view that every human being without exception has intrinsic value and deserves our protection?
Because no one is safe. If life is not objective, as Helen Keller challenged that conservatives just believe that life is anybody who breathes. And I would say it's not just anybody who breathes, it's anybody who's alive. It would include children in the womb. If we try to draw any kind of line that puts us on one side and somebody else on the other, we're ultimately just serving ourselves. We're being a selfish humanity. We're trying to get rid of anybody who is inconvenient to us. And to kind of bring it full circle with classical education, I think this is a good example of why classical education in and of itself does not save people either. And we should be, as a culture, proponents of not just teaching about truth, goodness, and beauty, but classical Christian education is effective and does help us, in especially in these ethical debates, because we see that truth, goodness, and beauty is apparent fully in Jesus Christ, who teaches us plainly how to think on these matters, and that's to always put the neighbor ahead of ourselves.
Finally then, Katie, how do you, as a Helen Keller fan, reconcile her eugenics views with the life that she was given by so many careful and loving people?
That's an excellent question. Even in writing this article, I thought, how do I write this and not ruin the reputation of my sister writer? Here's how I reconcile it. I can't. I can't reconcile what she once thought and what she once published with what she later published, but I can look at her and say this. I admire her ability. She obviously was a very thoughtful and joyful and compassionate person. I think she was mistaken, and I think she was misled. And my prayer is, Lord, keep us steadfast in your word so that we might not also be misled.
Katie Schuerman is a pastor's wife, a church musician, and a speaker. She's author of the book He Remembers the Barren and a recent column for The Federalist titled Why Helen Keller Believed in Eradicating People with Disabilities. You can read this article and purchase Katie's books at issuesztc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you for this opportunity.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we continue our series on Lutheran catechesis. We're going to talk about Scripture in the Divine Service, and it's almost a conversation that has to be explained in great detail, because when you talk about the divine service, you're talking mostly about nothing but Scripture. Pastor Peter Bender will join us next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.